Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, and I just love it when Republicans say something they believe exudes strength when all it does is shows their immoral incompetence.
Our friend and colleague Jim Jordan is a patriot. He is an America First warrior who wins the toughest of fights, going after corruption and delivering accountability at the highest levels of government on behalf of we, the people. Jim is the voice of the American people who have felt voiceless for far too long. Whether as judiciary chair, conservative leader, or representative for his constituents in West Central Ohio, whether on the wrestling mat or in the committee room, Jim Jordan is strategic, scrappy, tough, and principled.
That was New York Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik giving a heartfelt defense for Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan as she and many of her cohorts there on the Republican side were trying to get Mr. Jordan to become the next U.S. House Speaker. And when she shouted how Jim Jordan is tough and principled in both the committee room and the wrestling mat, I mean, you could hear, audibly hear there, the several Democrats laughing right at her. It's amazing she'd even bring up his wrestling past. Amazing. Wasn't there someone right there with her watching her write out her support for Jim Jordan while jotting down the words wrestling mat? I mean, shouldn't there have been somebody who said ex-nay on the wrestling mat? It's long been known that Jordan's been accused of turning a blind eye to numerous accounts of sexual abuse while he was an assistant head coach of Ohio State's wrestling team. Several former wrestlers have gone public and have accused Jordan of doing nothing while a team doctor molested them. Jordan refused to cooperate with an official investigation into the matter. Well, he's kind of done that many times, especially with January 6th. Jordan's office claims that he would have done the right thing had he heard of the abuse, but investigators said that the team doctor's sexual assault was an open secret. And this guy is the guy House Republicans want to lead the House? Again, Elise Stefanik might be the dumbest person in Congress, which is saying something. Or was she just simply trolling Democrats? If that's the case, then it shows just how empty and hypocritical Republicans truly are. They've been the ones for the past few years shouting and attacking and threatening the LGBTQ plus community, calling them groomers, while claiming they're the ones trying to protect kids. Yet they are the ones, Republicans are the ones who continuously get caught and proven to be the true groomers. It's hard to understand how this same Republican Party, which once had Dennis Hastert as its House Speaker, would choose to go down this route again by going with Jim Jordan. If you recall, Hastert was sent to prison for bank fraud as he tried to buy the silence of a former student that he sexually abused while he was a high school wrestling coach. And now nearly 200 House Republicans wanted Jim Jordan to be their next House Speaker. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised because it's so on brand for the right-wing Christian nationalist MAGA Republican Party, is it not? It's always the projection when it comes to them. Like the nutty Michigan Republican Party chair herself, Christina Caramo. She proudly announced her support and her party's support of Jim Jordan to be the U.S. House Speaker. And it's amazing because her party's last House Speaker in the Michigan State House, Lee Chatfield, a man of God, we were told, is still under investigation after his sister-in-law accused him of sexually assaulting her ever since she was 15. And that's just the tip of the iceberg as he's being investigated for being part of a criminal enterprise, including embezzlement, bribery, campaign violations, and also for controlled substances. A man of God. I mean, he's literally the definition of what a groomer really is. It's always the projection. And let's not forget how another former Republican House Speaker in Michigan, Rick Johnson, just pleaded guilty for accepting $100,000 in bribes when he was chairman of the Medical Marijuana Board. He took the money with the understanding he'd help people get licenses. And this is the party that claims to also be the party of law and order? People, when it comes to Republicans, remember, it's always the projection. It is always the projection. That's what they live on. They project while doing the exact things that they claim Democrats and progressives are doing. It's always the projection. But enough of the clown show that is the Republican Party in Michigan, or the nation for that matter. Let's concentrate on some real change that real progressives are trying to make here in our state of Michigan. For example, you may have missed it, but Democrats in the state Senate have passed a bill that stops domestic abusers from carrying guns. And give credit to a couple of Senate Republicans. I'll say this, give credit when credit is due, for crossing over and voting yay for these common sense bills as well. You see, these bills declare that anyone convicted of a domestic violence-related assault would not be allowed to purchase a firearm until 8 years after they serve their sentence. And these three bills list 11 circumstances that would help stop a domestic abuser from getting their hands on a gun. These circumstances include 9 state laws and 2 others from other states or the federal government. Democratic Senator Stephanie Chang, a friend of this podcast, of course, told Michigan Radio that Democrats made these bills pretty broad on purpose because they did that in consultation with domestic violence groups and law enforcement groups that do this work each and every day. Similar bills are awaiting passage in the democratically controlled state house, and I've got to believe that they will pass there. It's safe to say that these new bills give us a whole new ballgame and getting some tools to help protect more Michiganders from gun violence. According to Moms Demand Action, every month, an average of 70 women are shot and killed by an intimate partner. In Michigan, 65% of women killed by an intimate partner were killed by a gun. Recently, a man was arrested for shooting at his wife in Newaygo County in what was not his first domestic violence offense. Additionally, intimate partner mass shootings are not uncommon, though many don't make the headlines. That's according to Moms Demand. And Anna Gustafson from Michigan Advance, also a friend of this podcast, said in a recent story, annual data from Michigan State Police shows a stark decrease in the number of domestic violence victims from 101,171 reported in 2010 to just 69,765 in 2022. However, fatalities rose during that same period from 89 deaths in 2010 to 101 in 2022, despite the decline. Okay, so we are talking about saving lives and making this place a safer place for everyone to live. Now, not every domestic violence death is caused by a firearm. We know that. But a high percentage, as I just cited, a high percentage of domestic violence deaths are caused by firearms. This is the kind of change we were voting for when we hired Democrats to lead the legislature for the first time in 40 years. This was the change we were waiting for. Another change that we've seen is how Democrats are trying to pass some significant clean and affordable energy bills, which calls for the state being 100% carbon free either in 2035 or 2040. They're still working on that, increasing our energy efficiency. And these bills would give the Michigan Public Service Commission more authority to hold DTE and consumers' energy accountable. I mean, this is a big moment for our state to lead the way into the future. You see, Michigan's utilities provide expensive and unreliable energy. There's strong, clean, and affordable energy legislation in Lansing, but DTE is lobbying against it. We have a chance to move our state into the future, or states stuck in the status quo, which DTE and other critics want. Right-wing media, like the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, is trying to shut down the clean and affordable energy bills. They want us to be stuck in the past of using high pollution-producing coal energy plants in perpetuity. And they don't want us being carbon-free at all, which would only help us get clean air while using and contaminating less of our water here in the state. As Stanley Skip Pruss said from Love of Water, recently highlighted in Michigan Advance, switching to wind and solar is essential since they both are now the cheapest new energy infrastructure available worldwide, and that every megawatt of wind and solar energy helps us avoid the usage of 8,200 gallons of thermal cooling water. And Skip correctly notes how every acre devoted to solar panels for electricity results in a drop of more than 120 metric tons of carbon dioxide per year. I mean, that's pretty important, everybody. So there are many good clean energy plans in the works to help the state move into the future. And once again, these progressive ideas are popular among the voters. In a recent poll from Impact Research commissioned by the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, 65% of Michiganders support cutting red tape and streamlining the process for permitting renewable energy such as wind and solar so that local communities can generate more tax revenue and provide service to residents. 75% of Michiganders want stronger penalties and accountability for power outages. And there is also broad support for allowing farmers to utilize their own land for clean energy projects. So, you see, the people want this change, a change that won't just help create a healthier environment, but also strengthens our public health. And not only that, but it'll also help create jobs for the future, which helps keep and attract younger talent here in the state. However, DTE is doing what it can to gum up some of these promising bills and water them down before they eventually reach Governor Whitmer's desk. As Democratic State Representative Dylan Wagilla from Garden City wrote in the Detroit Free Press column recently, 93% of the state legislature accepted some kind of donation from DTE. Now, there's also some dark money in there that DTE is doing as well. It uses dark money in these PACs to also put out a message. You don't think DTE is just doing that out of the goodness of their heart, now, do you? No, they expect some payback. They expect some payback. You think they want a bill giving power to the Michigan Public Service Commission to hold them accountable for unreliable and expensive energy? They were the ones polluting our environment for years. They were the ones failing at keeping the light on or turning them back on after severe storms. And with the last summer being the hottest one on record, get ready for more intense heat waves, ice storms, and powerful thunderstorms, while DTE is already failing to keep your power on. This is just going to continue and continue. But they'd rather spend money on campaign donations than spend money on revamping their own energy systems. Oh, and before I forget, don't you forget that they asked for an additional rate hike this past year, too, because, you know what, they deserve it, don't you think? Well, State Representative Dylan Wagilla is coming back on here to talk about his plans to stop DTE and Consumers Energy from donating to secret dark money PACs, which will eventually help neutralize the influence that they've held in Lansing over the years. You're listening to LOL.
Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
Let me please say thanks again to my good friend Rich for making leftoflansing.com what it is. And please visit Left of Lansing for complete archives of my episodes, my Friday shorts, and many of my other daily musings I provide for you. That is leftoflansing.com. All right. The Democratic majority in Lansing is working on some clean and affordable energy bills designed to help push our state forward into the future when it comes to energy production, energy efficiency, and holding utilities accountable if they fail to provide reliable and affordable energy for our citizens. But the state's main two energy companies, DTE and Consumers Energy, are working hard to weaken these bills, and they're hoping that these campaign contributions that they've made will convince some legislators in the end to do just that. However, one Democratic state representative is working to change that from happening and to ensure that all of our legislators work for the people that they represent and not just those who fill their campaign coffers. And that is State Representative Dylan Wagilla, who is from Garden City. He represents the 26th House District, which also includes Inkster and Romulus, I believe. And I'm happy to welcome him right back here on Left of Lansing. Representative Wagilla, thanks a lot for being on this week.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me back on.
All right, well, let's pick up where I left off, that you wrote a column in the Detroit Free Press a few weeks ago where you explained how 93% of our state legislature has accepted campaign donations from DTE. However, you are not one of them. I was wondering, just to start things off here, how does that process work? Did DTE ask if it could donate to your campaign? I mean, how's that all work out?
I'm lucky enough to actually, I've never been asked to this point, but I, assume that's because of the messaging that we've done around DTE, but also just in general, you know, it's pretty well known that I don't take any contributions from corporations, period, because I think it's important for us up here to make decisions that represent people and not those corporations. And I think, you know, very clearly, we have seen the influence of this money over the last 40 years here in Lansing. You know, we've continued to see these utilities who have essentially monopolies on our utility system operate without actually having to be held to account.
Not taking any kind of corporate donations, is that just something, a principle that developed, I guess, even before you decided to run for state office?
You know, I think honestly, shout out to Senator Bernie Sanders and his run for president. That woke me up to this immense issue in politics myself, but also I think provided a model of trust for constituents for them to know that decisions aren't being clouded by that side of politics.
Now, DTE and Consumers Energy, like I said, probably isn't all fired up about those climate bills that I just talked about. But one part that I've got to think that they are not for is how these bills would give the Michigan Public Service Commission some more teeth to hold utility companies accountable. Now, I'm assuming, again, that's the big part that DTE and Consumers is fighting against. But I've got to believe maybe that is where they are hoping, and I know that this is maybe you're just speculating, and if you don't want to answer the question, you don't have to, but I've got to believe that's the biggest part of that they're hoping that will eventually get watered down, because they don't really want to be held accountable, right?
You know, I can't speak to this too much, but what I will say is that Democrats for a long time have been talking about how we need to do something about climate change. And this is our opportunity to do so. And I think it would be against the best interests of Michiganders to not give the Michigan Public Service Commission all of the tools that they can to hold our utility companies to account in achieving our energy goals. I think there's still some negotiation on what those goals are and how to achieve them. But again, I kind of hold out hope that we can do what's right on the best of the people and not look out for the interests of these utility corporations that are making billions of dollars in profits.
Now, you say you've got a plan to stop these campaign donations from DTE and Consumers Energy. Now, the Supreme Court says that campaign donations are companies expressing their freedom of speech, of course. Well, first of all, maybe you could talk about your plan on stopping DTE and Consumers Energy from donating to campaigns. And how would your plan get around that Supreme Court decision?
So unfortunately, you can't actually legislate out the direct contribution to campaign committees, at least in our understanding of the law. But what we're trying to do is stop what a lot of people refer to as dark money. The word we use is secret money, which is where these utility companies are donating to 527s and then 504 nonprofits. You can track the donations to 527s. Sometimes it's a little hard to track because you have to understand, you know, who is in control of the 527, how is that money being spent in the long run, et cetera. But the 501c4s are nonprofits, and they do not have to disclose all of their donors in the same way that 527s do. Now, what we're trying to do is put these regulations on the utilities, not through campaign finance law, but through the Michigan Public Service Commission. And we're doing this intentionally to kind of subvert the Citizens United decision. Now, that doesn't mean that at some point this would be ruled unconstitutional, but I think it's a different issue when these companies are in the position they are, where they have monopolies on our utility systems. I think there's a different argument to be made about these particular companies than other corporations, you know, in different fields, because they're so unique. They don't have any competition, and they provide a very vital role for our society, which is electricity.
So what this is doing in your plan is to somehow find a way to stop them from contributing to these dark money organizations then?
Correct. And I do believe this is something that we can do. And this is a reintroduction of Yusuf Rabi's bill. You know, I think he introduced it last session. But, you know, I'll even expand on that. You know, 93% of legislators, and I believe that the report was in 2021, took money from these institutions. And the amount they gave was $1.26 million. And this is the money you could track. And I want to make a quick point, because DTE's net income in 2022 was $1.1 billion. That is 1,000 times the amount that they donated to this institution. So the point I'm making is it is such a small amount. It is much cheaper for these corporations to essentially buy politicians by giving money to them and through political campaigns so that legislation doesn't move. I think that's just something we really need to recognize is how little money they've actually had to spend on politics to have the influence that they have.
You know, I didn't even look at it that way, though. That is a great point that when you said, so they spent $1.1 million on campaigns, even though they're making $1 billion.
Yeah, $1.26 million was spent, I believe, in 2021. And then in 2022, they made $1.1 billion. Now, this isn't accounting for the money we can't see. And I think that that's an important part of this. But I think even if you were to add that money in there, we're looking at $3-4 million, which is pennies compared to what it would cost them to update their infrastructure, et cetera. I mean, even in a February earnings call, DTE said to their shareholders that they were going to increase their profits by deferring maintenance and reducing the workforce. And these were things they were bragging about. So to me, I think we've got to stop this influence of their money up here in Lansing. And legislators in Lansing need to stop allowing this money to influence them because it polls really well to have better utilities. So I'm not sure here, I don't know what the right way to phrase this, but for legislators that might have any influence from this money, I don't think this is what constituents want. I'll just say it that way.
Well, you know what? And I think that's the part that gets people fired up, Representative, is they see how much money that DTE is putting towards campaigns, whether it be just directly to a campaign or through dark money, what have you, while that money should be used towards revamping how it delivers power to customers by putting wires underground or trimming trees, whatever. Because obviously here in the state, we have experienced so many power outages due to these severe storms that we get. It seems like if it's an ice storm in the wintertime or a heat wave in the summertime, it just keeps getting worse and worse. And I think people are saying, wait, why are they not spending more money on revamping their system rather than spending money on campaigns?
Right. And, you know, there's this thing in politics where people will try to make the argument that these dollars don't influence their decisions. But my counter to that would be, look at the history of Michigan in the last 40 years. We've had this problem for a while and we have not addressed it. I'm hopeful that the Democratic majority will address our utility accountability that's really needed. But it's complicated because to win office, you essentially have to raise, I think the average per state house race was $149,000. That's not an easy amount to raise. And that number is different based on, you know, what's quote unquote safe seats versus competitive seats between Democrats and Republicans. But that's still a lot of money is the point. And I think until we can do something to get this influence of money out of our political systems and put some controls on that, we aren't going to see the fundamental change that we really need to have.
Agreed. And have you talked to any constituents who are 100% thrilled with the job that DTE has done here so far recently?
No, I haven't. Not at all. I think what's interesting is that, you know, DTE has also found it beneficial for them to do philanthropy work across communities as a way to help their brand image. But I think there's no amount of charity work that this corporation or consumers can do that is going to make up for the fact that every time somebody sneezes, the power goes out and people are losing hundreds of dollars and people who have medicine they need to keep cold can't do so. And life sustaining machines go out. So hopefully the fire has been turned up enough to where something can happen. But at the same time, I recognize this is going to be a long fight. But I think somebody needs to be sounding that alarm. And that's the role that I'm trying to play here.
Do you have any supporters joining you?
Yeah, I believe we will have some co-sponsors on the legislation when we introduce it. We are almost ready to introduce it. We've been working through some of the technical legal language, and I believe in the next week or two, we'll introduce it. So hesitant to say so until I have some people sign on, but I'm pretty confident we will have several legislators signing on.
And I would have to think so. Again, it just doesn't seem like people are thrilled with how energy is being delivered to them, how unreliable it's been, how expensive it is. I think Michigan ranks one of the highest states, right, when it comes to the expense of our energy. So I've got to think that the momentum is more on your side than I would say it would be on DTE or consumers.
I think in the will of the people, absolutely. I haven't talked to one resident who doesn't think that it's a good idea to stop the donation of secret money from utility companies. You know, I'd even go so far to say that no company who receives state contracts or state funds should be able to donate in this way. I think it is a conflict of interest and an ethical issue. You know, maybe that's a fight for another day. And I would also go ahead and say that, you know, maybe we should start considering the fact that our utilities or central services like healthcare, maybe those things should be handled by the public and not be for profit. I think that's a greater discussion on how our economy is structured, but I would argue that our utilities should be publicly controlled as well as our healthcare institutions.
Hmm. Just because this popped into my head, so just want your opinion. I seem to recall efforts in the past. They obviously never went anywhere. There used to be an effort to try to break up the monopolization of our energy companies here, that it shouldn't just be two companies basically running the power throughout most of the state. Have you ever heard anybody express doing something similar like that?
The breaking up of the companies themselves into smaller companies, I haven't heard that particularly, but we do actually have legislation that would be another reintroduction of the Yusuf Rabi bill, which is using the powers of eminent domain to basically take public control of the utility companies. There's a little bit more that goes into that, and we're reworking those details. Probably we'll be introducing that sometime in the spring. You know, that is a belief that I have, is that institutions that are essential to the function of society and essential to the health of the people should be not for profit in the hands of the people. I think it's a much more efficient way to do things. And I believe, I don't know the outcome of this, and I don't know if you could look this up, but Maine was, I think this November might be voting to do exactly that, which is buy out the monopoly-owned private investor-owned utility companies to make them public.
Oh, all right. I'll look that up after we're done here. State Representative Dylan Wagella is joining us here on Left of Lansing. Just have a few moments left. I know that you have a principle that you stick to, and that principle is saying no to corporate subsidies. We talked about this the last time you were on. We touched on it a little bit. And, you know, as I mentioned the last time we talked, I know that principle, you got some criticism for it. And even from people, I would guess you would say, from the liberal side of the aisle. However, Ford recently announced that it's halting plans to construct that electric vehicle battery plant in Marshall. And now there's speculation that the UAW strike is one reason for this decision. Who knows? But the state gave nearly $2 billion to Ford for this project. And I think this just goes on to prove your point about how corporations can pretty much do whatever they want while still receiving this public money. And that's why it's dangerous.
Surprise, surprise, a large multi-billion dollar corporation isn't going to do what they promised to do. How many times can our institution be fooled by these corporations before we wise up? I've voted against now $3.7 billion in what I consider corporate handouts. But if people want me to phrase it a different way, you know what they are, is their tax breaks for multi-billion dollar corporations, and in some cases, cash payments. So, you know, for me, that is a massive amount. I think the Free Press recently did an article about this. That's more, I believe, than the last decade combined. The people of Michigan deserve better. I don't know how else to put it. I've been sounding the alarm. We deserve things like good roads and schools and investing in mental health and what I've continuously called compassion economics. I believe it makes way more sense to invest our public dollars into public goods that will also attract people to the state of Michigan, because people don't always choose where to live solely based on their job, let alone a $45,000 a year job in Marshall, Michigan. They choose where they want to live based on the community, the green spaces, the schools. Is it safe to live there? There are so many other things that drive the economy. And I think we've been looking at this the wrong way. You know, I haven't been shy to say that. And I think this moment and this spending of our tax dollars will not be remembered fondly. But, you know, we still have time to move forward in a way that I think is beneficial to people in Michigan. In my mind, we should be looking at raising revenues rather than cutting them. I think 482 Forward has recently come out with their recommendations for our public schools needing to raise an additional $4.5 billion to really fund schools at the level that we want. And they talk about things like raising taxes on the wealthy, a graduated income tax, and a whole list of other taxes that we could be raising here.
Well, thanks for laying all that out, because I was going to ask you that instead of corporate subsidies, how would you like to see our money being spent to help attract businesses here rather than what we've been doing? And many other states have been doing, which is just showering corporations with all kinds of money. I asked economist and business writer Rick Haglund from Michigan Advance recently, you know, does he see that trend changing anytime soon? And he was blunt about it. He said, no. That's kind of a bleak way of looking at things, but I don't see that changing how we've been doing business here, at least in the short term.
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting about it is I believe even with the Marshall Plan, the Michigan Economic Development Corporation stated that the return on investment was going to be relatively low. I think it was like anywhere from 1% to 5%. I don't have the information in front of me. But when you look at every dollar you put towards mental health, the return on investment is a 4-to-1 ratio. And, you know, not a math expert, but that's a lot better than 1-to-5%. I believe that's around 400%, as well as every person who is chronically homeless. If you house them, you save a massive amount in taxes because of the healthcare costs associated, the policing costs associated, you know, you name it, people becoming productive members of society. And I call this compassion economics. Because, you know, these are things that we can do and should do that would reduce crime and make more productive members of our workforce that we're just not doing. You know, shout out to the UAW, because I think what they're doing right now is really holding the big three to account for the greed that they've shown over the last, you know, several decades. And hopefully we will start to have a more equal, economically just society.
And that was going to be my next question here about the UAW strike here, Representative Wagella, because I feel like this is different. I really do. It seems like it's different, not just because you're seeing all kinds of solidarity amongst the striking workforce, but I feel like the message is different. I feel like the UAW is negotiating in a position of strength here this time, unlike maybe times in the past. That's just kind of my read on it. But I feel like with Sean Fain as its new president, I feel like that he has got a more focused message, and you just brought it up. And that message is, this is all about corporate greed. I think that is why the strike is popular amongst the people when you see polls.
I think, what did I read? Over 90% of the public is supportive of this. There's just no way for the big three to justify. I think they made $200 billion in profits since 2013. There's no way, and if you look at the way they're paying their CEOs, these, you know, multi-million dollar deals, there's no way to justify the wages that they're paying the UAW with the profit margin that they have. You know, I think people every day are becoming more and more aware that it is not big CEOs in corporations that make the profits, but it is the workers and their labor that create all profits. And they should have the right to be entitled to some of those. But I think what is so fascinating about the UAW and what is so important. So as you might know, I spent some time organizing inside teachers union, was a teachers union president. And inside the labor movement, there's this concept of rank and file leadership. And what that means is, those are leaders that really drive their decisions from the grassroots, from the bottom up and not the top down. And that's what Sean Fain is doing, right? He talks about it in every single meeting that he has with his members online. He says that the members are the ones who drive the union. They make the decision. I think we might see a scenario where leadership brings an agreement to membership and they vote it down. And Sean Fain, I don't believe he's going to put his hand on the scale. I think he will truly let the membership decide here. And that is what is driving such great solidarity, is because for the first time, members feel like they're heard and they feel like they have control of their union. And that is, I believe, the future of the labor movement, is having union leadership that recognizes their power and their authority comes from the membership and not by making friends with the bosses.
Last question, and this was one that I asked Sarah Lazare. She's an editor with Workday Magazine. I asked this question when she was on last week, so I'm going to ask you, why do you believe that the labor movement has gained so much momentum both across the state and across the country here of late, especially after the pandemic?
The short answer, sheer necessity. People everywhere are struggling to get by. I believe in Michigan, we have one of the lowest unemployment rates in recent times, yet we have 40% of people meeting the ALIS threshold, which is from the United Way, meaning 40% of people in Michigan are struggling to meet their basic household needs. And that's people who are working, right? Where we live in a society right now where you can work 2, 3, 4 jobs and still not afford to pay your bills. I think people fundamentally at their core recognize that the working class is getting the raw end of the deal in this country. We are the wealthiest nation on the planet, yet We don't have universal health care. We struggle just to get by. We work more hours than anywhere else. And I think people are starting to awaken to this class warfare, if you will. And they're also awakening, I think, in the political arena and recognizing that they want politicians that represent the working class and not the corporate class. But that's my assessment. And I think we've seen that over the last several years. I think the Sanders campaign really woke a lot of people up, as well as the Occupy Wall Street movement. But I think there's this challenge to capitalism right now that we have not seen in quite a while. And I think that that's a good thing.
I agree. State Representative Dylan Wagilla from the, what district are you again? The 26th district. Yeah, there 26. I had it. Thanks a lot for being on here this week on Left of Lansing. People can follow you on, well, it's not Twitter. It's now X, right? They can find you there.
Yes. Yep. It's just Dylan Wagilla. I'm the only person in the world with my name, so it's pretty easy to find me anywhere.
All right, cool. Well, will you come back again sometime and talk some more? Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for the work you're doing.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Hey, special thanks again to State Representative Dylan Wagilla for being on and for being a fighter for all working Michiganders. And I'll make sure to link to his Twitter feed and also to his official Michigan House page as well. Oh, and I did look up that issue in Maine, which Representative Wagilla brought up. There is a ballot proposal this November in Maine in which voters there will get to decide if two privately owned utilities should be publicly owned companies. However, from my reading, this issue isn't exactly black and white there. Supporters to make them publicly owned include both progressives and some right-wingers. Opponents also include some progressives and Democrats. One argument made by opponents is that the two utility companies are already beginning a green transition thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act. So many argue that there's no need to change things. Supporters, though, say they've received unreliable energy at higher costs. Hey, does that sound familiar here in Michigan? And supporters say they think making the companies public will make them more reliable since they will have to answer to the people. I'll link to a lengthy article of this Maine ballot initiative in the show notes section of this episode located at leftoflansing.com. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. As of this recording, Republican Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan lost a second bid to become Speaker of the House, and he even lost more votes the second time around. Ugh, Republicans are getting so desperate that they're now floating the idea of having Republican Patrick McHenry of North Carolina continue his role as a temporary speaker for the time being, just so they can do some normal business in the House. Oh, yeah, that's right. And once again, New York Democratic Congressman Hakeem Jeffries collected more votes, but not enough to become Speaker. Now, Republicans will never allow Jeffries to become Speaker as long as they have the majority. That being said, Republicans will probably need some Democrats to cross over the aisle and help them vote somebody in. And let's remember, Democrats will never be able to find a so-called moderate Republican to back since just about all of them are MAGA Republicans in some shape or another. There's no Alan Alda from the West Wing to come in and save us, all right? So rather than get into the parlor game of who Democrats should or should not back, I would like to focus briefly on what Democrats should demand in order to get some of them to cross over and vote for some Republican, since that party cannot get its act together after ousting former Speaker Kevin McCarthy over 2 weeks ago. First, I don't see Republicans agreeing to some kind of power-sharing template. I just don't see that happening whatsoever. They will not do that. But what Democrats could demand is that in order to get just enough of them to help put whichever Republican congressman over the top, Republicans must allow a vote on restoring the highly successful child tax credit. Now, this would once again guarantee $3,600 for families with kids under six and $3,000 for kids 6 to 17 years old. And when this was enacted for 1 year back in 2021, the child tax credit proved to do precisely what it was designed to do, cut child poverty. It cut child poverty in half to a historic low of 5.2%. And it also led to a cut in Michigan's child poverty rate by 71,000 kids. And it also cut young adults living in poverty by 74,000, according to a Kids Count report by the Michigan League of Public Policy. This helped kids and young adults throughout Michigan, with 1 in 4 of them living in rural parts across the state. So there's one major concession that House Democrats, especially Michigan House Democrats, ought to be raising. And they must get a guarantee that some Republicans will vote with them to pass the advanced child tax credit. Maybe ensure some of those New York Republicans that Democrats would vote to restore higher state and local tax deductions, which the GOP voted to cut back in 2017. Now, these taxes are better known as SALT deductions, and cutting those deductions were highly celebrated by Trump and MAGA Republicans. Don't forget that. So Democrats could also do that. Democrats should also get a concession that a strong paid family leave bill get a vote on the House floor. And they could also ensure passage of funding for Ukraine as well. I mean, these are just some of the initial steps that Democrats in the U.S. House could and should press if Republicans beg Democrats to bail them out of this MAGA mess. Democrats could negotiate here from a power of strength, and it's right there for the taking for them. I mean, this is how you demonstrate to the voters, all the voters, how much you are on their side, not corporation side, how much you are on their side. Will the Democratic leadership use that strength? Let's hope so.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for another edition of The Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Democratic State Representative Dylan Wagilla for joining me this week to talk about his efforts to slow down DTE and consumers' energy's influence in Lansing, and for also describing what he termed as compassion economics to help grow Michigan for the future. It's always great having him on, and we need people like Representative Wagilla in Lansing. You always know where he stands. And that says a lot. And before I forget, I wanted to congratulate Ashley Fennessy, who's appeared on this podcast as well, on being named the Chief Advocacy Officer at Planned Parenthood Advocates of Michigan. We also need people like Ashley on the front lines when it comes to women's health and economic needs. So Ashley, congrats, and also go fire up chips. Finally, I hear there's a ball game happening this weekend in East Lansing. So whatever happens, make sure everyone is safe down there and be smart. Remember, as Apollo Creed said, be a thinker, not a stinker. And don't forget, we are all Michiganders in the end. And go blue. Yes, I am a Chip alum, but I went to all kinds of Michigan games at the Big House in my younger days. So I will always have a soft spot in my heart for the Wolverines. Now, why do I feel that's what's going to bring me some of my harshest hate mail yet? Next week, we'll talk more about these clean and affordable energy bills being worked on in Lansing as Darrell Slaughter from the Natural Resources Defense Council of Michigan comes back to share more of his insights on those bills. Until then, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.